February 15th, 2013. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2163, on House Bill 2166, and House Bill 2355. And Regina, do you want to tell us about those bills?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2163 has no revenue impact and a fiscal impact was issued. It requires the Oregon State Lottery to adopt a comprehensive policy that minimizes the risks and harms associated with lottery games and mandates the director of the Oregon State Lottery to employ a person to advise the Oregon State Lottery Commission on addiction and mental health concerns related to playing lottery games. Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2166, there is no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact. It requires the standards and curriculum for alcohol server education courses to recognize certain indicators of addiction related to playing lottery games. Applies January 1, 2014. Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2355 has a revenue impact issued, a fiscal impact issued, and it alters how funding for lottery proceeds are appropriated to the Problem Gambling Treatment Fund in a fiscal quarter.
Thank you very much. Representative Kenner and I are going to present these bills. We have quite a few people coming to testify, and when you testify, you can testify about all three bills, about two bills, or just one bill. And if you would state before you testify which that would be, I'd appreciate it. With that, I'm going to present these three bills. Representative Kenner, will you join me?
Yes.
Thank you.
I don't know. So, Madam Chair, who's going to go first between you and Representative Kenner?
Ladies first.
If you'd identify yourself first, please.
I am State Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 41, and I'm also Chair of the Human Services and Housing Committee. Colleagues, I'm pleased to bring to you today House Bill 2163, 2166, and House Bill 2355 that all relate to problem gambling. For several years now, Representative Kinnemer and I have been concerned about the effects of gambling in our communities. We've heard from many individuals and families about the devastating effects caused by problem gambling. Disintegration of marriages, families losing homes, wasted retirement funds, shame, furtiveness, and embezzlement. Our state sanctioned and promoted gambling, and it's wreaking havoc among a vulnerable population. At last session, we put together a group consisting of Representatives Kinnemer, Representative Kenny Geyer, and Representative Julie Parrish to work on proposals for the 2013 session. We tried to include all the stakeholders, Larry Neiswander, who is here from the lottery, Bill Perry from the Restaurant Association, addiction and mental health folks from the Oregon Health Authority, treatment providers, and problem gamblers. We met in small groups, we met a few times with big groups, and we had a very wide-ranging discussion. There were lots of concerns. Hayden Islands, Casino Row, the addictive effects of the bells and whistles and gaming machines, and future technology issues. The marketing budget of the lottery and what it buys, and many casinos like Dottie's and Foxy's popping up on every corner. But in the end, the group narrowed its focus to gambling addiction and a few specific proposals that we in Salem can't accomplish. There were four bills that came about as a product of that group, and the three of them are before you today. 2163 requires the director of the Oregon State Lottery to employ an individual to advise the director and the State Lottery Commission on mental health and addiction issues associated with the Oregon State Lottery. House Bill 2166 requires an alcohol server education course to include curriculum related to recognizing characteristics indicative of the addiction to or other emotional behavioral issues related to playing games on the state lottery. House Bill 2355 modifies the method for determining the amount of lottery proceeds to be allocated to Problem Gambling Treatment Fund in the fiscal quarter. In an effort to reduce the state's addiction to lottery funds, a fourth bill, 2167, puts a cap on the amount of money the lottery will contribute to the state general fund. This bill was assigned to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. There are many people here today who are speak directly on the provisions of this bill, and we're hoping Representative Parrish can be here, but certainly Representative Kenner is, and we'll hear from him and hopefully from Representative Parrish. And if I, well, why don't you go ahead? I've gotten a lot of emails. Thank you. I've gotten lots of emails from folks since this issue has hit the newspapers and also on email. And so some of these people, their stories are very touching. And I'd like to read some of those. Actually, some of those people are in the audience who will be telling you some of their stories. But I know you have your own story, Representative Kenner.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, and I'm Bill Kenner, State Representative, District 39. I want to say a special thanks to Chair Tomei for her leadership and involvement. The four of us, I think, have had a great experience talking about this very important issue. I was grateful of sorts for the headlines in this morning's news. The former mayor of San Diego has gambled away on video poker a fortune. Very tragic story, brain tumor, lots of other issues. But I guess it was sort of a way to highlight some of the stuff we're talking about today. I guess it concerns me greatly that, and I don't think it's good social policy to try to go back to prohibition-like days and eliminate gambling. You can't do that. But, you know, I think our charge is about finding balance in this issue. And I don't think we want to get rid of the Oregon Lottery. It brings in money for good causes. And frankly, it provides entertainment and opportunity for people to have a good time, socialize, and do some of the things that life are about. But it, in my mind, is getting out of balance. I don't have the most current statistics. When we were looking at this last year, it was estimated that in Oregon there are 77,000 people who are addicted to gambling in Oregon. 77,000. That's a really substantial amount when you start thinking about it. And one of the sad things is, like other addictions, an addiction to gambling has an impact not just on them, but on their families, their friends, and just a whole lot of people. And in particular, the estimate is over 65,000 of that 77,000 are addicted to our games, video lottery, our games, the ones that we have responsibility for. And as we study these addicted people, we find that the average person has $30,000 of unsecured debt. Unsecured debt. I mean, this means they've already put themselves substantially behind the financial eight ball, proverbial eight ball, and they're accruing debt, just like the former mayor. They end up spending more than they can afford. And at this point, a whopping 2% seek treatment. So we also need to have some strategies to maximize access and entry into treatment, because treatment can be quite effective. And we have some examples. In my county, we had some examples of how this plays out in some other formats. In West Lynn, one of the city workers embezzled $1.4 million of public funds and spent it on Oregon Lottery. Similarly, in Estacada, in the fire district, $200,000 was embezzled from the fire district in Estacada. And the thing that I found is that I've been talking to businesses. Many businesses have embezzlements from their business because as people get addicted, they keep thinking that they're just around the corner from winning more. And so it's sort of you borrow a little money here and a little there. And well, it's not really stealing because you have really good intentions. And it's not embezzlement. They often forget that there's really a legal responsibility. And what we've discovered is that also most businesses fire these people. They don't usually prosecute them. I think some of that's humanitarianism, but a lot of it's practicality, because otherwise your business would probably be on the front page of the local papers, and it's probably not the kind of publicity that we want. I think there are technologies for treating people that work relatively effectively, those who suffer from addictions. And I guess a couple of other things is I would say that thanks go out to the lottery and especially to the director. I think we've had good conversations and he's been involved with our work group, and I see some changes in the way their commercials go. I like the new commercial that talks about go out and have a good time, and shows the lady taking her cell phone out and setting a time limit, and maybe and the fellow going through his wallet and trying to figure out how much he can afford to spend, because actually it's waste, but it's entertainment, and some of the other things we do, well, those are choices, but we need to be wise about those choices. And I appreciate the lottery's reception to that, and I think we have something to offer. I guess in conclusion, too, and I'm not speaking specifically to the bills, I'm particularly hopeful that we can get that cap bill, but I think these other three are good steps in the right direction. But I guess one final thing that I would say is, with the enormous amount of money that the lottery produces, and the vast majority of it is through the video games, I think that in certain regards it would be fair to say that we the legislature, are addicted to gambling. And I really think we need to think about that. Our charge is to have the best interests of the public in mind. And I certainly agree, I don't disagree that economic development and fisheries and parks and education, thank you, are terrific things, and they can all use a lot more money. But at what cost? At what cost? And I do think we need to think about how we can find balance that serves the best interests of Oregonians. That is our challenge. I think that's the spirit in which we bring these bills to you, is we want to find balance that represents the best interests of Oregonians and realizes that there are those who really need to be protected. I'm not sure how much I need to be protected, but I gamble. I love to get Powerball when it's over $50 million. I mean, if I'm going to play $2, I just want to be filthy rich. Not just rich, filthy rich. And I regret to tell you, unfortunately, to date, I have not won. But every so often, every few months, I get the urge and I buy a ticket. And I help and I think it goes to somewhat of a good cause. So I'm feeling sort of good about it. But not everybody can approach it with that moderation. And I think we need to help those who can't do the right thing. And with that, open to questions and comments. And I think also the chair had something further she wanted to add.
I'd like to read some of the emails that we've gotten, and then we'd certainly be open to questions. By the way, the woman who embezzled the money in San Diego, she was a former mayor.
Yeah.
She spent $1 billion on gambling, and she lost $13 million, and she embezzled $2.1 million from a trust fund. So this is what I heard from an Oregonian.
Excuse me, over a 10-year period.
Yes, thank you. This is from a 57-year-old professional woman who had never gambled until a year and a half ago. She had $10,000 in savings, zero credit card debt. She had 7 years left to pay on her house mortgage. She put $700 into a savings account each month, and she was saving 12% a month to her 401k. Now she has credit card debt in a year and a half of $30,000, no money in savings. She owes 10 years. She refinanced her house, so now she owes 10 years on her mortgage, and she has a loan against her retirement account. I think she's not unusual. She won for a while, and then she began to lose. And then, pretty soon, it didn't matter if she won or lost. It only mattered that she was distracting herself watching the lines of the video slot machines go round and round. I'm going to go back to first person because that's how she wrote it. I quickly spent my savings, and then I started to use my credit cards. With a credit score of over 800, that was easy to do. She typically goes to the same bar because it feels safe. She gets cash from her credit card from the server, and they happily oblige. And there's also, of course, an ATM machine right next to the lottery machines. The people I see in machines next to me are regulars, people like me who are not laughing, who are not having fun. They are staring at the lines with some level of despair on their faces, wondering, when will it come to an end? So she talks about us having more stimulating machines, and she said that's not what they need. My plans to retire at 65 are gone. I barely can sleep over my deaths. I also heard from a man in the Powellhurst-Gilbert neighborhood. There are numerous bars full of impoverished people robotically hitting buttons to reach a big win. Many of these players are homeless. The joyful and upscale people seen in the advertisements are nowhere to be found. There are more, but I think we're going to be hearing. Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you, Representative Gilby, for trying to set me straight. So, colleagues, these our gambling policies, as Representative Kennemer said, are having real, personal, and devastating effects to the residents of our state, and it's time for us to own up to this problem and deal directly with the effects of our choices about gambling have on the residents of our state. And I urge you to vote yes on these three bills. Now we're open to questions.
Yes, Representative Rosen.
I was wondering if you could distinguish for me the difference between a problem gambler, of which there are 47,000, a pathological gamblers, of which there are 278,000, and an addict. These are all terms that I'm
hearing. Let me refer that to someone else. Actually, addictions were not my specialty.
I'm
a psychologist or was.
Okay.
I'm now retired. But I think there's some interesting definitions there, and it would be helpful to explore those, but let me let someone else be
great.
The expert.
Thank you.
Well, I have a couple questions for you. I really do appreciate you doing the work on this. I mean, because I got to tell you, it's bothered me for a long time. So thanks for getting out here on this. The one bill that I'm interested in getting the feedback from you on is House Bill 2166. Deals with the server education course.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, as I'm reading what the bill has here, I guess I don't get it. I'm just trying to figure out what is the purpose of the training, and it doesn't look like there's any extension then for the server to recognize the characteristics and then follow up or doing anything with that. Is there going to be some rules with that, or is there some response? I mean, I'm just trying to kind of figure out how this works out.
Go ahead.
You know, I think part of this comes from some very special experiences. My wife and I, we have a favorite little Chinese place we like to go and eat, and very often we end up sitting in the bar because it gives me a chance to watch the people who are playing these games. And I hearken back to what the chair said, that people get into playing these games. In fact, they play them so fast, I don't think it's humanly possible to even see the conclusion of each segment of the game as it moves. It's going so rapidly. It's clear that it's a compulsive, addictive behavior and out of control. And it's amazing to watch them go and hit the ATM machine there and get cash on their credit cards and just leave for a little bit and come back and it's their local bar. It's a place they hang out. They are typically regulars and they're there. And if they're enjoying it, it's often not very obvious. And it's more of a compulsive thing. And part of this is in talking with some of the bar owners. You know, these used to be their regulars before they got these machines in some instances. And they have, a lot of them have really strong feelings of concern for these people, and yet how do you approach these people? And that's part of what this bill is attempt to do, is a lot of these, the servers and the owners want to say to these people, you know, maybe maybe you ought to take a look at what you're doing. And how do you do that? And I think the thought, part of the thought behind this bill was it's an opportunity for us to begin to put this into the minds of people that they need to be responsible. And they maybe need, you know, the surfers maybe, just like we recognize when someone is having too much to drink, maybe when someone is engaging in just too much gambling, maybe there's a word to the wise, as the proverbial saying goes. And how would you go about doing that? Because that's a tough thing to do, particularly because you don't either want to offend them, you know, and it's kind of a perverse incentive for the owners, too. But most of them are seeing the damage that's happening, and it's amazing to me, as you talk to a bunch of these owners, how concerned they are and how they are in a quandary and how they have trouble with their servers helping them figure out how to do this. Because I think most of us want to do the right thing, and maybe a little help will help. Do you want to add to that?
I do. I think one of the things that we want to make sure that is there, because the only place we can have gambling machines are places where they serve alcohol. And so we want to make sure that there's material there that talks about gambling addiction and signs and how you get help, et cetera. So that's one of the things that a server can do. So part of it, and we'll be having people here who are recovering addicts, and you might ask them there, what would be helpful to them? Because I don't think that's clear in the legislation what would actually happen. That I would assume that there would be professionals who would say, this is what the servers should learn to identify and maybe give some help to those who may be over the line with gambling use. So let's ask them if they're...
I'm also curious, how did you determine the $2.60 and the $13 for fees?
What?
Yeah, you have, from what I'm reading...
That's no change in the U.S.
Oh, excuse me.
Legislation.
That's all right. Well, I'll move on then. Are there any other states that are doing something similar to this then for the education part like that?
I don't know, but let's ask. We've got,
okay.
We've got Jeff Murata coming, and I'd like him to be the next person to be called, Representative Olson.
Do you have anything, Representative Goddard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for bringing these bills forward. I'm just going to put my questions on the record. Hopefully, some of the people testifying today can illuminate this a little bit for me. First of all, forgive me for being a little bit new at this, but I'd like to get a sense of the trainer serving education program. I don't know what the term is for renewals. How often do you have to come back in before? So I'm wondering how long before we cycle through the total number of servers before we provide this education. 5 years? Just for the record, I saw a hand go up in the back of the room, so that answers that first question. And the second question I've got is, if we're going to require this training of all servers, I don't have a sense of what proportion of our servers work in proximity to lottery machines versus people that are serving wine in wineries or restaurants that don't have the machines. I'm just trying to get a sense of context, this bill versus the number of people that would receive this training but never use it. And I guess the largest question I've got is, we've got a bill that requires the training, and so they have the ability to recognize a problem. Then what? I heard the representative suggest, maybe a word to the wise. There's no incentive to actually use this training to promote some further good. And I'm not suggesting liability. I'm not suggesting penalties. I'm not sure what I'm suggesting. I'm just trying to get a sense of what your notion is here. Once we recognize the problem, then what do we do?
If I could, just, you know, I think you'll be good to hear what other people have to say. I think that one of the things that was amazing to me is how we struggled at how you try to get at this. I mean, how do you get people to behave better? How do you protect, how do you help people protect themselves? These are age-old questions, and they do not have simple answers. And so these are our best efforts, but very human efforts at trying to get towards that goal. Yeah, and there will always be those who are going to be not law-abiding and so on. And also, I think one of the other things that our committee did is we discussed it. We decided to steer away from punitive approaches. we thought that that often engenders worse behavior rather than better. So that was kind of a philosophical underpinning from which we came. But I agree. I, you know, there's a certain way in which I wish we could put them in handcuffs and lead them away. You shall not do this. But that's not the way it is in America, nor should it be, by the way. But by the same token, when these people are addicted, they are almost unable to control their behavior, and they're going to damage themselves and their loved ones. Thank you.
If I can add to that, I think you would agree with me, Representative Kennemer, that if we had a choice of bills, I think the first bill that we would probably support would be House Bill 2163 and 2355 and 2163, I think, is one that has the most questions, but probably might be the least important of these three bills in this package. So feel free to ask people coming up after us your great questions.
Okay, Representative Gallegos has questions.
I want to thank the work group for the work that you've done. I'm just concerned about, for example, the study here, talking about finding similarities and linkages between problem drinking and problem gambling. I just don't feel like those are strong enough kind of correlations that to really initiate action. And it just seems a little bit anecdotal. So I think we need more substantial kind of data. But I think it's a great issue to bring forth, but I do think we need to pursue it more. So that's just speaking to 2166, so maybe we can move on to the others. So.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I make a comment?
Excuse me.
No, you can come up. I just wanted to make a comment to Representative Gallegos' point, because it's not a question, it's a comment, but I'm hoping others might address it. I know one of the reasons that we talked about this, and Representative Parrish, who's gone through this kind of training, was very passionate about this issue, is that when people change their employment all the time, and yet the license is only renewable alcohol handling certification is only renewable every 5 years, and so they may start. That's you right here. Okay, great. You heard your ears burning, but so you can talk about your direct experience. How people cycle in and out of jobs, and so they may get certified and be working in a bar, and later go work at Dottie's. And mention also the invisibility, the invisible nature of this particular addiction, and why that's so critical. So,
colleagues, thank you. Hi, sorry I was late. For the record, Judy Parrish, House District 37, and I was in an actively moving transportation committee where we're moving a lot of bills today. So I'll be brief. The bill that you got in front of you to have a little bit of gambling addiction language go into the OLCC class, I'm sure you probably heard, you can't sell lottery unless you're selling alcohol. So the two go together in this state. And what we're asking for here is, and the process would, I believe, come through an administrative rule in terms of what that language looks like. And we're not asking servers to cart somebody who's got they would think have a gambling problem off to rehab. And we certainly aren't asking them to intervene in a way that we would with alcohol, where we actually physically take a drink away from somebody who is visibly intoxicated, which is what the statutes around alcohol service are. A little bit different here is we want people to be aware of some of the signs. We want to make sure that servers are aware that the materials that Oregon provides around problem gambling are available, and that they're paying attention to those materials. If somebody comes to them and has a question or wants to engage them in a conversation, we certainly know that bartenders get in lots of conversations with their clients or patrons who come to the restaurants. We want them to be knowledgeable about where the resources are and how to help direct and support people. And so in another world, I used to have a providership with the OLCC. I taught alcohol server education to waitresses and bartenders and folks who needed a liquor license. And while not every restaurant does have lottery, you know, what Rep. Kenny Geyer mentioned of the license is portable. It follows the server. It doesn't follow the actual the location. So is this is kind of a transient, sometime community of people going from job to job to job. And so the ability to take that license, have had that training, and actually you know, possibly be able to interact in with somebody's life is critical. You know, and the prevention piece is huge. So, you know, my sister had a problem gambling issue before she died in 2011, would certainly steal your wallet to take your money to go to the, you know, video poker piece. So I have real mixed emotions about lottery as a general rule and where we can help even just a handful of people by taking just a 4 or 5 minutes out of that server education training and just to talk and make that aware. I think that's a valuable cross use of resources and education knowledge that would go into getting those folks aware of the problem gambling. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you for your testimony today and for your work on this group. And Representative Kenny Geyer also, thank you. Just invaluable
good work.
Help.
And I'm glad, you know, the work of the 2011-12 session didn't go for naught and that these bills are coming forward in this biennium. And just appreciate the work of the committee. And I will get back to my really exciting transportation.
This is exciting, too, Representative.
Build the bridge, right?
Build the bridge, okay.
So anyway, thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative. Okay, we'll call up Jeff Murata and Tim Murphy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Murata. I'm the owner and the senior consultant of a firm, Problem Gambling Solutions. It's a business that I've owned for the past 5 years. Prior to that time, I worked as the manager over Problem Gambling Services within the Oregon Department of Human Services. And that's when I began my relationship with the lottery, collaborating with them on responsible gambling projects. So my relationship with the lottery goes back to 13 years or so now. And I'm going to bring forth some of those experiences as I talk to you about the importance of the bill that you have in front of you, House Bill 2163. I want to begin by clarifying or coming to a shared understanding of what responsible gambling means. In my mind, House Bill 2163 is a responsible gambling policy bill. Responsible gambling, according to a definition that I prefer, is the provision of gambling services in a way that seeks to minimize the harm to customers and the community associated with gambling. And I think it's an interesting way to look at the Oregon Lottery as actually providing a public service. I believe they are doing that. And they're also offering a product with known harms or liabilities. And so it's an interesting business, I think, for the state to be in, and one that deserves a great deal of attention and responsibility. Back in December of 2011, the Oregon State Lottery formed an advisory group, and this is a group that I shared with you last time with the informational hearing on the Oregon Lottery. It was an advisory group that looked at the marketing strategies and responsible gambling programs that the Oregon Lottery was engaged in. And it came forth with a number of acknowledgments, first of all, the number of programs the lottery is doing to address problem gambling and to support responsible gambling efforts. And also had several recommendations on how those efforts could be improved upon. One of the takeaways from that experience was one, the Oregon Lottery, I felt, was very transparent in working with this group, that they were very willing to accept several of the recommendations and wanted to improve upon their responsible gambling programs. But what also came out of this was there were some barriers to some of the recommendations that were observed by the management staff. Some of those barriers had to do with what are our responsibilities around responsible gambling? How far do they go? If measures to minimize harm impacted revenue, is that going too far? They didn't, those, and I'm paraphrasing from a memo that came out saying, justifying why certain recommendations weren't going to be pursued and because of revenue implications. It's not to say that there's a number of programs that the Oregon Lottery is currently engaged in that impacts revenue. So why do we need this bill? I think the first reason we need this bill is to really clarify the responsibilities of the agency. At this point, the Oregon Lottery Director has requested a legal review of some of the major recommendations that were made in the report. And the larger question regarding the Oregon State Lottery's responsibility is one that's not expected to be answered in this legal opinion, and instead required focused policy that deals with the lottery's need to be a careful regulator of its impact. Now, House Bill 2163 seeks to do just that and clarify the Oregon Lottery's responsible gambling policy so that decision makers, Oregon State Lottery partners, and the public share a common understanding of the Oregon State Lottery's high priority on protecting Oregonians from the unintended negative consequences associated with practices and products of the lottery.
Jeff, hold on just a second. I think Representative, can you wait until this is through, or is it something pertinent for now?
It's very quick. Madam Chair, I appreciate what you said at the beginning. We have three concurrent hearings.
Yes.
And the doctor just clarified the bill he's talking about.
Okay.
But maybe we want folks to say if they're choosing one, two, or three.
Yes.
So I know what bill they're talking about.
Exactly. I said that at the beginning, I think. Yeah. So you are talking just about the first bill, 2163. Is that right?
That's right, Madam Chair. This testimony refers to House Bill 2163. The other reason why this bill is important is there's a need to create a legacy around responsible gambling. And what I mean by that is without a well-defined responsible gambling policy, future Oregon State Lottery administrations may take a less active role in implementing responsible gambling practices. In the 13 years that I have collaborated with the Oregon State Lottery, there has been four different Oregon State Lottery directors with varying levels of attention to providing responsible gambling programs. As administration change, so may the Oregon State Lottery's responsible gambling practices. This bill is more about creating a legacy to protect the public's health than it is about redirecting current Oregon State Lottery trends to better address responsible gambling. Another reason why this bill is important is we need to strategically position the Oregon State Lottery to better compete in the gaming market. And what I mean by that is the gaming market is one that changes, and often what guides those changes are technological advances, technological changes. As technology changes, so will the gaming marketplace. Different rules get rolled out about what is permissible and what is not permissible, especially around the area of internet gambling. That's also going to create a different marketplace. So it's as these legalized gambling, as these new markets develop, it's going to be critical to have a well-developed responsible gambling policies and practices in place. Without strong responsible gambling programs to offset concerns about new gaming technologies and products, public and political pressures will undermine efforts and create unnecessary setbacks and inefficiencies. And I think we saw that as an example with the Orcade. If a more aggressive responsible gambling approach was taken at the onset, that project may not have had the setback that it did. While it is unknown if responsible gambling efforts can effectively keep problem gambling rates in check, we must take a strong proactive approach to justify a state monopoly on types or forms of legalized gambling. Another reason why we need this bill is the Oregon State Lottery Commission and Director would benefit from legislative direction. The Oregon State Lottery has a difficult mission in what some see as competing demands to maximize revenues and to minimize public harm caused by Oregon State Lottery products. As the Commission and the Director form policy that may negatively impact revenue, they need clear legislative language that justifies those decisions and actions to strengthen player and public protections. Now, this This is not the first time a bill like this has come in front of the legislature. There was one, was it 2 years ago?
I think so.
One of the main arguments against this bill was that there was a concern that it would create increased litigation. So the opponents of House Bill 2163 will warn you and others that legislation to strengthen the public's protection from lottery products and marketing will lead to litigation. Now, this was the same argument that was made in 2003 when the American Gaming Association released their Responsible Gambling Code of Conduct. Phil Setzer, I'm mispronouncing his name, but it was the chairman of Harris Entertainment. He was also a former attorney. And he stated at that time, litigation is always going to be present. The risk of inviting more litigation through such requirements isn't high enough to offset the benefit of corporate responsibility. House Bill 2163 incorporates several of the 1999 Productivity Commission's regulatory governance recommendations for gambling in Australia. So a lot of this is borrowed from the work that was done back in 1999 in Australia. It has now been 10 years since this blueprint was released and several of those recommendations turned into policy in Australia. And since that time, there was recently a review of those efforts, and since that time, there's been very little litigation in Australia in which the plaintiff was a problem gambler bringing action against a gambling venue or service. Furthermore, when litigation does take place in the United States, in particular, problem gamblers have generally been unsuccessful against gaming operators in the United States. This information supports the belief that the risk of inviting more litigation through such requirements isn't high enough to offset the benefit of corporate responsibility.
Jeff, I think you're giving us more information than we need right now.
Okay.
And you've got written testimony, is that right?
Yes.
Yes, great. And Jeff, did you want to speak on, I think I have you down for the other two bills?
Yeah, I have some written testimony for House Bill 2166. Although I must say Representative Parrish covered most of the points that I wanted to make. The only thing I have to add to that is I was involved in activities that involved focus groups with Oregon Lottery or Video Lottery retailer frontline staff. And we asked the staff about responsible gambling, their needs, and whether or not they felt additional training around responsible gambling, problem gambling awareness would be beneficial. And many of them, although I wouldn't say all of them, but I would say the vast majority, welcomed additional education, and they felt like it was important for them to obtain additional education around responsible gambling and problem gambling, particularly the resources that are available for problem gamblers. So it is something that the workforce is open to and feels is important. One of the barriers that we came across in this project, and this was a project I was working with with the Oregon Lottery, was that it's a very difficult population to reach because there's many retailers. It's a group that changes jobs quite a bit. And I think what 2166 does is it offers a solution to how do we reach all those employees or that workforce in an efficient way. The only other thing I want to add to this is that this should not be viewed as a replacement to the Oregon Lottery's retailer training efforts, and they have efforts in place. Primarily, right now, they're focusing on management staff and owners. But I see this as a complementary approach to efforts being made by the Oregon Lottery, not as a substitute.
And Jeff, if I could ask you a question there. It seems to me when we were discussing this in the large group of meetings, Representatives Kinmer and Kenny Geyer can verify this, but my memory was that there is training, but it goes to owners who may never set foot in one of these establishments. Is that correct? I'm thinking of Dottie's and Foxy's and those that are owned by some corporation way up here. It's not like your neighborhood.
Yeah. Madam Chair, that is my understanding as well, just in terms of right now, everybody who obtains, if I understand this correctly, obtains a new license to be a video lottery retailer, they must undergo training, and that training does include information about responsible gambling and the policies around responsible gambling and problem gambling.
Is that training in person or is that online?
The lottery director would be a better person to ask.
Right.
I don't want to provide any misinformation. And I should say that with efforts through the Oregon Lottery, it's around responsible gambling training. It's been described to me as an evolutionary process or a work in progress. So it's my hope that that's going to extend beyond the current audience that it reaches.
Great.
And then I did offer some the other piece, just to address some of the questions that came up around this. What do we do? We inform people how to recognize signs and symptoms, and I would recommend that the language that is added to the server training be expanded to include information about resources in the community for problem gamblers, and it wouldn't be very difficult to also provide education on how soft interventions could be made by servers if they have somebody seeking assistance for a gambling problem.
So that was a question I think you raised also, Representative. Is that true? Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering if there are gamblers that hide their addictions, like you see alcoholics typically in the old days, housewives that might be alcoholics, and it was hidden. And I wondered if there is a certain portion of the gambling addiction population that keep it hidden from everybody, essentially until they're broke.
Madam Chair, Representative, what's that? It's often problem gambling is often described as a hidden addiction because there aren't often obvious signs of the disorder. You can't smell, the gambling problem on their breath. Often, problem gamblers go through great lengths to conceal the extent of their gambling involvement, their gambling debt, their relationship with gambling. What happens if this is referring to the server training? What we've discovered from these focus groups is that many problem gamblers develop a relationship with the server staff because they spend so much time in the establishment, and they tend not to float around. They tend to have a favorite establishment that they visit. So they do form a first name basis relationship with these servers. And there are sometimes opportunities where the problem gambler may say, I wish I knew how to stop. I know that I shouldn't be doing this. I know that I need to get help. And what the information to servers simply does is when an opportunity like that arises, it is hoped that they are equipped with information that can be then transferred to that person in need of help so that they can provide accurate information and encouraging information about the help that's available.
Madam Chair, Dr. Murata, you've alluded a little bit to, it sounds like you did some research into determining from employees that are servers that would feel that this is very helpful, very valuable information. Did you conduct the research going into that? And if so, did you complete a document to that effect?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, this was through some work where I consulted on with the Oregon Lottery. There were transcripts of there were reports. There were some summaries of the findings from the focus groups. Those are the property of the Oregon Lottery. You might want to ask Director Heiswander if he can provide those to you.
Okay. just follow up on that. Do you recall right offhand what the population was that you were after during that research?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Olson, yes. It was in the service of developing a training program. And the idea there is that the best ambassadors for promoting responsible gambling and dealing with problem gamblers are those that are frontline staff that are working in Dottie's and other places that offer video lottery products. What we did was, with these focus groups, is we brought in servers. And we also brought in managers and owners as well, but those were in separate groups. So there were several focus groups composed of servers and then other focus group composed of owners and managers that we took them through a protocol and documented their responses to a number of questions around their attitudes, knowledge, and perceptions around responsible gambling and problem gambling.
Maybe we can ask
Director
Maxwander.
Absolutely. Well, Madam Chair, I was wondering if maybe we couldn't get what the summary was. Copies sure. of the summary. Sure. I'd love to read that.
And we've got Mr. Maxwander here, and we'll ask for some of that. Representative?
Madam Chair, we've got a full slate here.
We do.
So, Dr. Millard, I'm glad you're back again. I appreciate your testimony over and over and over again. And one of the reasons is you've had experience in both departments, and now you're consulting. And so I always appreciate this, but I'm frustrated. Madam Chair and I come at this from a different place, but we're both frustrated, and I want to make sure everybody understands how much I appreciate the Chair's leadership I always have on this. But I do not see how we are improving the more we talk about programs. Soft interventions, more training, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have a solution for these 800 lines and all of that, but I'm unimpressed by them, and I'm unimpressed by the way we approach this. I don't think, and I want your comment on this, because you know both districts, I mean, both departments, excuse me. How can the Oregon Lottery be a helpful partner if their mission that this legislature gave them is to run a fair game, whatever that is in lottery, but an honest game, and to make the most money you can? They're cooperating, you're giving them credit for trying and so forth. It's not in their mission. You know, you quote the guy from Harris, that's great. I can't imagine Harris being concerned about problem gamblers. Sorry, I've been to Las Vegas and I've been to Reno. So, if their mission is to be a gambling outfit, it's always going to have an ugly underbelly, and I don't know how we can count on them to be a partner. And you might want to comment on how DHS is a partner. Perhaps that's more appropriate, but I don't see the effectiveness of looking to the lottery for solutions to something we've charged them to do.
Thank you for this opportunity to address this, because you're bringing up some very important and relevant points. I believe the best way to look at the issue of problem gambling is through a public health lens. And what a public health approach and public health lens tells us is that the most effective way to deal with a public health issue is for various partners to work together to be part of the solution. And so it's important that that all the partners are really part of the solution. And the large players in our state system are the Oregon Lottery and the Oregon Health Authority. Now, the Oregon Lottery, in my assessment, actually is charged with mitigating gambling-related harm. In their mission statement, in the rules, they're to, I'm paraphrasing, to maximize revenues commensurate with the public good. Commensurate with the public good, I believe, means to reduce the harms that are unintentional but related to practices and products that the lottery has. And the reason I believe that to be true is it doesn't make good sense in my mind to say maximize revenues and commensurate with public good means maximize revenues. It's repeating the statement. So I believe the only good translation to that, the one that makes the most sense, is commensurate with the public good really does mean to move forward with efforts to reduce harm. And this is a this isn't just particular to Oregon. This is an industry approach. What we've seen within the broad gaming industry is greater and greater attention to responsible gambling. Corporate responsibility around the area of problem gambling has evolved incredibly. I called Harris yesterday to make a reservation for a conference, and I was put on hold. Instead of listening to elevator music, I heard about responsible gambling programs. It is something that has become, I think, a standard practice now for gaming operators to take this issue quite seriously, because I think, frankly, if they don't, they know that their business is in jeopardy. Harris would have a hard time expanding into jurisdictions if they weren't seen as being socially responsible. And in other countries, lotteries are only allowed to exist because they put people in front of profits. That's the only way that they can justify their monopoly. So I think it's very much in the spirit of the lottery to engage in very active responsible gambling programs. Now, I do admit that these programs don't have large impacts. However, even if it impacts one or two or a handful of people, I think it's worth it because there's very little downside to it. It's a slight inconvenience for some. Most of the measures that we talk about don't drastically impact revenue production. I invite you to ask, Director Neiswander his view on this, but I think he would share some of those same opinions.
Madam Chair, I would just say that I disagree with the importance of appearing to be socially responsible, but I don't have a better idea. But I don't think it's working, and just to say you appear to be is not a good answer for me. I think you and I can agree that we need to redefine the mission of the, not in this committee, but in this legislature, of the lottery, because I have a completely different interpretation of the good, of the public good, than you do. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you, Representative. We have quite a few people who have signed up to talk, and I know some of these people have come from out of town, and I want to be sure to hear from them. Larry Neiswander, are you still here?
Yes.
Larry, so I may ask you, if we don't have time, I know you're here in Salem, right? Is your office here in Salem? Right. So we can call you back, and Mr. Smith. And but other people who are not located in Salem, I want to make sure that we hear you today. So, Tom, I'm not sure, or Tim, I mean, I'm not sure if you're in Salem.
I am in Salem, but I can be very brief.
Great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Murphy. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Bridgeway Recovery Services, located here in Salem. Bridgeway is a mental health and addictions treatment clinic. We treat thousands of people for a variety of illnesses, and we supply problem gambling treatment on an outpatient basis, and we are the only residential problem gambling treatment program in the Northwest. We treat people from Oregon and from Washington State. And what I want to first speak about House Bill 2163, and want to support everything Dr. Murata has been offering to you. The importance of this bill is that what I can say is some things, the relationship between the Oregon Lottery and the problem gambling treatment world is improving over the last several years. The leadership currently at the lottery has reached out to us. I spoke with Larry just yesterday. Members of his staff have been in my shop to talk with our staff and our clients. So there's hope, Representative Gillum, that things are better than they've been in the past. And I believe there is a collaborative understanding that we need to build programs that address the needs of folks and understand that problem gambling, while it contributes, or gambling contributes to revenue for the state, it also is creating difficult lives for many Oregonians, and we need to mitigate those as best as possible. And there are positive ways to do that. One of the ways that we strongly support is 2163, adding some expertise to the lottery around the issues of mental health and addictions. I think having somebody in in their shop with that expertise that can help them design programs, make decisions around advertising campaigns, around some of the evolution of lottery gaming that's coming in the coming years is going to be really helpful to them. And I can't think of a downside to adding expertise to an organization like the Oregon State Lottery. I think that would be a good thing. There's lots of questions. What's the scope of this job? What's their role? What influence will they have? What authority will they have? I think those things shouldn't be a barrier to creating the position. Those things can be worked out. Collaboration with the lottery, with Dr. Murata and some of us in the treatment community, would be great to do that. Real quickly on 2166, the server adding. I actually am a server. I know it's odd to be running rehab and actually have a server permit, but I also have a small vineyard and have one as a result of that. When I went through the training, there wasn't one word mentioned about problem gambling. And I can tell you that training is not so dynamic and engaging that it can't benefit from adding a small component of education around problem gambling, and I would strongly encourage you to consider it. I agree with Chair Tomei that this isn't probably the most important bill of the three. The third one that you're looking at today, 2355, is around stabilizing funding, the way that currently funding can fluctuate based on lottery revenue. That becomes a big problem. We had a significant problem in 2010 with a reduction of funding that came to us to provide treatment. We had to eliminate 10 residential beds as a result of a dip in funding. That funding came back in 2012. And that was great. We were able to reinstate that treatment. But I'm a businessman. I run a business. It's a multi-million-dollar business. And to have stable funding becomes really important. And this bill will solve that problem of building programs, raising awareness of the need for treatment, and then having to close the doors because there's been a short-term drop in funding. So your support for that bill, 2355, would be really important and significant.
Thank you so much. Madam Chair. Quick questions?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. You know, I mean, I really appreciate the concept of working with servers. I mean, the concept of using natural helpers has been around a long time, using bartenders, hairdressers, and so on to identify cases and even to inform people of resources and so on. So, I mean, it's a very helpful, useful idea, but I think just from what I'm hearing, it just what makes sense to me is 2163 sounds like a good step to take that might lead then to 2166. It just seems to me 2166 needs more substance before I could feel comfortable with it. But certainly 2163, where you'd, you know, develop then, and I don't know how long the period you're talking about, a year, I imagine, of developing a report, identifying mental health issues, I think then coming with a proposal of training, I think that would be very helpful.
Going back a step to, in part, Representative Gilliam's question, I think one of the fundamental differences in this whole arena of addiction to gambling is access is a fundamental determinant. And I wondered if you could just speak, because we've got Oregon Lottery is your next door neighbor, whereas the casinos are inconvenient and the addiction rates are dramatically different, if I understand right. And could you just very briefly speak to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Kimmer, I'd be happy to. This is something we talk about all the time. Where Bridgeway is located in North Salem on the corner of Lancaster and Silverton Road, we have the 27 beds there, 10 of them identified for problem gambling, and those beds are, there's a waiting list for them. These are people whose lives have been really ravaged by gambling, and within 200 yards of our treatment facility, you can find video poker machines in a Chinese restaurant, in a Silver Dollar Tavern. You can buy tickets across the street at Safeway. We walk by billboards. Matter of fact, I spoke with some Larry staff right outside of my shop. There's a billboard on Lancaster Boulevard that used to advertise gambling games. And I'm asking them to be considerate about that when they do their advertising campaign. They agreed to help me with that piece. you can't go far in Oregon without being able to gamble. Every grocery store, every drug store, every restaurants and bars that have these games, they're everywhere. I spoke in front of this committee a couple of years ago and said that probably the biggest mistake we made is we mandated that the video poker machines be put in bars. We should have put them in churches and let the parishes reap the benefit. I think we'd be having a whole different conversation today. Sorry for doing that again.
That was a good repeat. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. What we're going to try to do, I know, Jeff, you have a lot more information than we've got time to hear today. So I'm going to ask our staff person to connect with you. I know you're going to be traveling out of town a lot, and coming up a time, we'll bring you back again, because I think we have a lot of questions here in this committee about these very important bills. We want to make sure that all our questions are answered. Tim, and you're close by, too, so we might call you back also. Thank you so much. So, John Charles, I know you're not in Salem. Is that true? I think you're not in Salem. Come on up. And so I don't know who some of these. I know Bill Perry. I know you're here, but I'm going to call you back later. Julie Hines, are you at Salem? So you can, why don't you come on up? And Kitty, pardon? Come on up. Okay, Mr. Charles.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan policy research center, and I'm here to support House Bill 2355. I'll just briefly mention my rationale. That is, this bill, if it passes, will, on the surface, it will help address one problem, the gambling addiction problem, but actually it will address two. Because Representative Kenemer, in his comments, did specifically comment on the problem of your legislative addiction to lottery money, which poses what in academic circles is referred to as the moral hazard problem. So in your heart of hearts, of course, you all care about the collateral damage caused by the state's lottery monopoly. You know it's harming many people. You want to help them, but you are also incentivized to maximize revenue from that same monopoly. And when those two things collide, you tend to favor the maximization of revenue problem that Senator Gilliam also talked about. And so, although this bill is a very tiny step in that direction, it does at least help address the problem the previous witness talked about. He's a business person. He has these residential treatment programs. It helps stabilize revenue, but it will also help you by diverting some tiny amount of money out of the general fund. And I would say, which is a good thing, and in fact, you know, 15 years ago, the legislature spent the money pretty much on a pay-as-you-go basis as it came in, but your addiction problem got so bad you started selling bonds to Wall Street, securitized by future lottery earnings, and to the point where there are almost no lottery, there's almost no lottery debt capacity left. You've securitized so much of it. So I support the bill as is, and in fact, if in a brief moment of legislative euphoria, you were to strengthen lines 18, 17, and 18 and divert even more money for this problem gambling treatment fund or some other off-budget fund like a rainy day fund, I'd support that as well, since that moment of legislative euphoria is probably not going to happen this session. That's probably for a different conversation, but I do support the direction you're headed here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. Kitty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I am currently a resident.
Your name, please?
Kitty Martz.
Thank you, Kitty.
Thank you. And I'm currently an inpatient resident at Bridgeway Recovery Services here in Salem. I feel very fortunate that there is such an inpatient program in the Northwest, and I live in Portland. briefly my story, and you're more than welcome to ask me any questions on any level of how personal. I'm very transparent. I am formerly an executive in training for a major car corporation, and the combined income of my husband's and my household was about $250,000 a year. Several years ago, we had the opportunity to relocate in Australia that has very advanced gaming systems, somewhat beyond what Oregon had at the time, which were simply kind of poker games. And these had more stories and animated characters and a lot more whistles and bells. And I quickly became addicted to the machines in Australia, did hide, to the question of people that will hide their addiction, did hide it as best I could from my husband, and eventually caught on and insisted I get help, and then eventually asked me for a divorce. So my lifetime total, well, in the last few years, is about $200,000 in loss, and I'm now on food stamps and eligible for disability because I have tinnitus or hypercaucus, hearing disorder. I very much would like to be a contributing member of society, and that's why I'm here today, because I find these three bills that I'm going to speak to also very meaningful for me. I grew up in a fairly normal middle-class family. I was magna cum laude in psychology from the University of Colorado, and I have an MBA from Cornell and also a master's in international business from Queen's University in Ontario, Canada. So I believe I'm very employable, and I have specific skills, and I don't have any co-occurring disorders that would necessarily preclude me from contributing to the economy in the state of Oregon. However, my compulsive gambling has become so profound that at the point I was able to move up the several-month waiting list at Bridgeway to the top, I was suicidal and had emptied the little bit of money I had at a great penalty in the 401k that my husband had set up for me prior to asking for a divorce. Though I am anecdotal, clearly, I believe I represent the 10% of people that gamble who bring in about 53% of the revenue. And I don't feel targeted, or I don't feel that the Oregon Lottery is to blame. I take total accountability for my problems that created this. I do have a disorder that is pathological gambling, and it's now defined in the fifth most recent copy of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that psychiatrists and psychologists use for the purposes of classifying and insurance billing. So it's as recognized now, pathological gambling, as schizophrenia or bipolar or any kind of delusional, hallucinating kind of mental illness would be. And will probably very soon in my mind, though I'm guessing, be very billable in insurance in the same way you can collect money to support the treatment of people with drug and alcohol problems. In speaking to the three bills, I can agree that they're not going to be the be-all and end-all of what would make the difference in my life. I know that there's going to be a couple $100 million put towards new machines in Oregon in the next few years. And I feel that if there were some kind of self-monitoring system that could be included as part of that technology, people like me would have more of a chance of not losing their livelihood and personal lives entirely as I have, that I could choose to opt out after I lose $100, that I could put a one-hour time limit on it, or that I'm only able to gamble for so long, because once I get going, I cannot stop, and I will stay at a machine for, you know, as many as 18 hours in a row, and I have in the past. I'm an escape gambler who is interested in playing machines, and I like to go into kind of an escape zone, like the holodeck on Star Trek. If you remember the episode where Geordi got addicted to the holodeck, that's Kitty in a nutshell. There's other gamblers that are more action gamblers that are interested in horse races, or when Powerball gets up above $100,000, they get really interested in buying a lot of tickets. And I think those games are absolutely fine and very productive for bringing in revenue. What I'm more concerned about are people that are escape gamblers like me that simply cannot stop once they start playing video machines. I love living in Oregon, and I traveled to 25 countries last year and sorely missed being in Oregon and chose to move back here when my husband asked for the divorce. And one of the things I like most about the state is that it's not a nanny state that tells us what we can and can't do lightly, and I so appreciate the members of this committee taking it as seriously as you are and teasing out the parts of the execution that will be most effective. I don't have any idea how to do that, the implementation with the servers, but I think anything that moves in that direction could be helpful in the long run. I especially support 2163 in having counsel by a very qualified gambling specialist, and I've met with the folks. John and Larry from the lottery have agreed that it needs to be someone who's really current on what's happening in gambling, because the training and the technology and the understanding and the studies are really only as current as the last year or two, and it's evolving so very quickly. This next generation of machines that this over $200 million will be spent on, I believe, will be kind of a RoboCop that we're not going to be able to a lot more people are going to fall victim to. I think they will probably soon have the technology that machines can respond to our patterns, the way we think, when we bet up, when we bet down, and there's going to be a lot more people here to testify of how they lost their lives to it, and quite literally. In fact, the suicide rate is very high for people in my demographic. In terms of you being in a position as legislators to fetter our behavior, I guess I would compare it to bike helmets or cancer warning statements on cigarettes. I understand there's even something about smoking in cars now that's been put forward, just in terms of safety and people's inability to self-govern what's appropriate and what's safe. Loans being given to people with very low credit scores that then weren't able to meet their financial obligations. I think there's been a lot of ways that the legislature has been able to come forward and say, we don't know exactly what to do about this, and we certainly don't want to be more powerful than we should be, but please let us help you in some small way. And I believe that all three of these bills would be a really good step in the right direction. And I would really welcome, if you have any questions for me, I do have some statistical knowledge because I'm interested in the topic, but a lot of personal experience with it.
Thank you so much, Kitty. Any quick questions?
I actually do.
Go ahead.
You asked about personal. You said we could ask you
Absolutely.
Personal questions.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a previous history of obsessive compulsive disease or anything in a prior history? And what do you think was your trigger for this? I'm just trying to understand mm-hmm. your description mm-hmm. of suddenly turning into mm-hmm. just like mm-hmm. a completely obsessed person.
Right, right.
And if you think of written warning or verbal warning would actually impede you from going forward when you're this obsessed. It's
right.
a long question, but
no, I appreciate it, Representative Woodside. Obsessive compulsive disorder is, in my understanding, more based on performing rituals out of anxiety, such as touching or counting. I think there's probably far more addicts who have a very low resting arousal rate. We're kind of walking around like zombies, being depressed a lot. And I'm a 43-year-old divorced, overweight woman. I'm really going to be, premenopausal and prone to feeling depressed. So it was one of the only times I felt alive when I was gambling compulsively, and one of the only times I felt happy. And I didn't care how much money I was losing or that I was hurting the marriage with my really awesome husband. I only cared how long I got to keep my butt in the seat and keep playing. So I think the biggest trigger was midlife, feeling ineffective, having some low-grade depression, and I mentioned my co-occurring disorder of my hypercoccus and tinnitus, that the world feels very loud to me, and by playing video games, I was able to kind of check out and escape for a while, which is, it seems counterintuitive because they're quite loud, but that was really my only happy place other than scuba diving.
Kitty, thank you. so much for coming today. Your testimony was very fascinating. Thank you. Julie.
This may be inappropriate, but I just want to say you're not overweight. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julie Hines. I'm from Lane County. I am a problem gambling prevention coordinator and a member of the National Council on Problem Gambling and also an adjunct faculty with the University of Oregon with problem gambling coursework. I come with the hat on from Lane County Public Health as a problem gambling prevention coordinator. And just regarding these three bills, the Lane County Board of Commissioners have reviewed and are in support of all three. Briefly, what Jeff and Tim said regarding basically all three of these bills, but just to kind of tack on just a tad, regarding the issue of 2163 and sort of institutionalizing the expert within a lottery, I can't speak to the Lane County Board of Commissioners regarding the amendment, the language change that has to do with changing addictions and mental health to responsible gambling. That might be something to consider just with regard to what the folks here have said about addictions and mental health versus responsible gambling. So that might be something for the committee to consider as we go forward because of the fact that responsible gambling can mean lots of different things to different people. So that just is a thought there. There are precedents for this, and I know Representative Gillen mentioned the issue around the lottery or businesses taking interest in helping to serve the people. I know that the current lottery has done a great job of really working as partners. They've implemented a lot of things that came out of that report that came last year with the Marketing Advisory Committee. And like Dr. Morata said, we can't guarantee what the future will bring in terms of leadership. So institutionalizing it by making a policy would really go a long way to help those of us on the ground level to help balance the message that is usually consistently promoting, and not enough about responsible gambling and awareness about problem gambling, particularly when we look at vulnerable populations. And as Katie mentioned, I don't know the RoboCop example, but just in terms of the future, with so much going on, so many different things happening with electronic forms of gambling, possibly mobile gambling down the road, and I think it's just really important to have someone who gets it, who knows about problem and responsible gambling, and can really help convey that message within the lottery, and hopefully then help provide some stopgaps to potential other public relations issues that came out of the Orcade and Santa's Beard and things like that. So that's just some thoughts around 2163. With regard to 2166, I think I'm probably the only one in the room that might disagree that it's the least important. I think they're all three very important. The reason why I think this one is particularly useful is having talked with folks in my county. We have 200 video lottery retailers in my county out of 361 lottery retailers. We have 200 video lottery retailers, and knowing that they're all OLCC licensees, knowing how many servers are out there on the ground, encountering people that have problem gambling issues each and every day, that go up to people that are sitting on their machine each and every day for hours and hours on end, and as somebody already mentioned, develop that relationship with them. And yes, the cynical us could say, no, they're all in it for the money. All they want is the money. But many businesses are not just there for the money, and particularly ground level servers could provide that help for people before they go too far. Just one other thing with regard to a question around all retailers needing training for something that's not already 100% of people don't have video lottery terminals. I have to take public health trainings every single year. I have hazardous materials, bloodborne pathogens, and all of these other trainings every year. And yeah, I may not encounter somebody with bloodborne pathogens or bleeding on my in my office, but I do need to know those things, and I do think it will follow the server, particularly with the transient nature of employment and with folks just moving around. It's just good for people, I think, to be aware of those of the signs of problem gambling. That's just Pollyanna me. One other piece about the issue around alcohol and co-occurrence is that problem gamblers in Oregon treatment really do have a high co-occurrence of alcohol abuse. And we see it year after year in problem gambling treatment. The clients report a good third of clients in our treatment report concurrent abuse of alcohol. And so that is an issue that we consistently see, and data do support that through other research studies as well. We do have the material. It's already ready. we're only asking, I would believe that it would only be a few minutes of time. I know that one of my colleagues has been delivering the trainings and said that they're very responsive. The server education, the servers have been extremely responsive to the education. Representative Parrish and Kenny Geyer already mentioned a few of those pieces of it. With regard to 2355,
Before you go on to the next one, we're not going to be having a work session, obviously, today. And I'd be really interested if you would share the name of that person who would give us more information about the servers. Sure. That would be helpful. We could invite that person to a future hearing.
You bet.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. I said you bet. That was like Representative Kenemer already said, only 2% of problem gamblers end up in Oregon gambling treatment. We're trying to stabilize the funding. Meanwhile, as Mr. Murphy said, when a business reduces their business, when the funding's not stable, you then have to convince people to come back. And that's from a business perspective, but also from a client perspective. Clients have fear. They're scared that the treatment's not going to be there. They hear about budget cuts. We know budget cuts are all around us. We know that it's like par for the course these days. But when it comes to problem gambling, there are very, very few experts in our field. And this is why what makes it different. When mental health gets cut, when other addictions get cut, there seems to be quite an array of folks that can still contribute to help mitigate the problem. When it comes to problem gambling, there are so few experts. And so when problem gambling gets cut, crisis respite gets closed, staff get laid off, prevention and outreach program gets cut, the infrastructure, the time that it takes, and the resources it takes to get those back up again are just, it's quite a bit. So. Thank you for the opportunity. I know that a lot of folks have other testimony, but I will be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Julie.
I just wanted to thank you for your personal sharing. A lot of courage and appreciate it and wish you a good fortune on how you proceed. But I did want to make a comment about another consideration that I've been thinking about in terms of particularly 2166 and the whole notion of server training. One of our concerns also has to be with job creation and just adding more regulation to small businesses. And I think that's something we're, or at least for me anyway, I'm trying to look at ways in which we can sort of cut down on those regulations. Yet this would call for more regulation. And so anyway, that's just something else that certainly I'm going to consider. But again, I'm not speaking against the bill. I just, it's a sequence that I'm trying to work out in my head. So thank you.
And maybe you can make some time to talk privately with Julie. That would be great. Yeah. Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Julie, what do you think the odds are that Madam Chair will let me ask you three long questions?
Zero.
Okay. On that second bill, 2166, you mentioned training that you've had experience with.
Maybe said, you know, this seems to be the most difficult one, and we'll come back and deal with this later. We'll have people coming in to testify on this, including Julie can come back. But I want to make sure we've got time to hear from other people who haven't had a chance to speak yet. Can you hold that, or can maybe ask Julie offline?
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, I believe that would be 0%.
Right. Thank you all very much. Okay, there's some people I don't. Carol Hardy, do you live in the Salem area? You do.
What are the
okay. Come on up. And somebody, I can't read this, but the last name is MIT, looks like ends in DT.
That's me. Cynthia
Milbrath. Oh, right, Cynthia, right. Thank you so much. And Cynthia is one of the people who wrote to us. Larry, I'm going to ask you to come back at another time. Let's see, who else am I missing? Wes Wood. Wes, did you have some? Where do you live, Wes?
Pardon?
Come on up. So we've got 15 minutes. So actually, I'm going to let Andrea, right? What? Tell me your name.
Cynthia,
I'm sorry. Can't read my... Okay, go ahead, Cynthia.
Well, I'm sorry, this is my first time I've ever testified.
Well, we appreciate you coming.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Tomei, I want to thank you and the committee for your work for drafting these three House bills that are addressing addictive gambling and its devastating effects on our society. I applaud your push to do something about what has become a very serious problem in our state. The January 28th article in the Oregonian was very insightful, and it inspires me to tell you my own experience with this matter. For the record, I am not a gambler. I've played Oregon Lottery perhaps a dozen times in my life, but I'm seriously affected by an addicted gambler who is my husband. My husband has poured tens of thousands, if not over $100,000 of our savings into his lottery game of choice, which is Oregon Keno. He is also an alcoholic, and being dual addicted makes this a very difficult problem for him and for our marriage. The situation has become so serious that I've had to take measures to protect myself from his destructive behavior by filing for divorce, and this puts me in the precarious situation of losing my health insurance and what is left of my financial security. However, the risk of staying married to his addictive behavior leaves me no choice.
Cynthia, I've got to stop you for a minute.
Yes.
Just give it a note. We need your full name, please, for the staff person who's writing.
My full name is Cynthia Louise Milbratt, and I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Okay. I have become the collateral damage in a war between my husband's addictions, the outlets that serve him, and the state that takes his money. I've talked extensively to the OLCC about my problem drinker. The OLCC can do some things. They do have an enforcement wing, but they have to work in, they can do nothing without the cooperation of the outlet owners. And generally, the outlet owners say they don't know that he was drunk. And without an obvious tragedy to point to, they usually get off the hook about over-serving. I'm frustrated, I get with the OLCC, the establishments who over-serve. The agency does have that enforcement wing, but I see no enforcement on those who allow addicts to over-gamble. What is forgotten in this equation is that the single gambler usually is not the only one who is affected. The money they gamble is only partially theirs. And this is squandered without the knowledge or permission of others whose interests are disregarded in the haze of addiction and the inherent greed of outlets. This destroys families, marriages, and tears at the very fabric of our society. The burden of state funding should not hinge itself on any degree on the addictive behaviors of those who have no control. In the case of the establishment owners, their apparent insatiable greed for lottery dollars affects so many people on both sides of their doors, and preying on addicts is inexcusable for both the state and the outlets. The DHS is overburdened by the very problem that state-sanctioned drinking and gambling creates for our families. Our mental health agencies and treatment centers are crying for help on those very issues, and the state has effectively created for itself. I fail to see how any of this helps maintain a healthy society. Treatment is largely ineffective, and there are exponentially more problem gamblers than there are ever those who seek treatment. And treatment only scratches the surface of a very large problem. Other systems must be in place to curtail the problems of self-destruction by the mentally unstable and the addicted individuals who find these highly addictive substances so seductive. I have read the House bills you have drafted that address these issues of addictive gambling. These bills won't cure the problem of addiction, but they would help curtail some of the destruction it leaves in its path. These bills are a very good beginning, and I'm grateful to you and the committee for finally addressing this terrible issue. And I want to mention that as I was writing this, my husband had been at an outlet
on 17th and Powell in Portland since 3 o'clock that afternoon. I had finished writing this at 10 o'clock. He was still at the bar. Eventually, he got in his van, very intoxicated, drove home, and we were many hundreds of dollars poorer. Who can say that this is not a very serious public health safety issue? I speak to you from my own personal experience, and I'm only one of thousands of people who are affected by addicted gambling. The problem is so much more serious in the state, the outlets, and specifically those who gamble will admit. I have some notes here about some of the questions that you were asking. I did have some answers in my head as I was shaking my head emphatically, yes. My husband hides his gambling. He also hides his winnings. He's dual addicted with alcohol. I think the term was there was another term that was being bannered around, but it seems to be a problem that goes hand in hand. He has attempted his life twice. We're talking about suicide being a big problem with the problem addict. He underplays his losses. He moves from bar to bar. He gambles $1,000 to $4,000 a month. And this is something that I find, which I found to be really, which I, about the whole issue of I think it's called 2166, about the servers being the sort of the watchdogs for the problem gambler. The servers are often problem gamblers themselves. My husband's best buddies are servers. It becomes a sport between them and the guy on the other side of the bar. You know, they're all keeping their eyes on the Keno board. And the Keno is kind of interesting because it's right there, right at the bar, so it can be very social. You know, you can be talking to the guy next to you, the woman next, you know, to the other side. You got your eye on the board, and so does the server.
Cynthia, we one more sentence maybe, and then we've got to move
on. Yes, and that was it. But I just wanted to say that though, I think that 2166 needs a lot of work. It's really one of probably the least effective measure that's on this that we're talking about today. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for listening to me.
For your time, and thank you for composing this letter that you've sent to us, and thank you for coming today. Carol, can you give us, I know people, we have until a quarter of, but I've just been told that Vice Chair Olson can stay for another 10 until 10 of. Can we stay until 10 of? Okay.
I'll be very brief.
Thank you, Chair.
My name is Carol Hardy, and I am the Chair of the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling. I worked for the Oregon Lottery really since its inception, beginning in 1988 until just over a year ago. In that capacity, I was an advocate for problem gambling and responsible gambling programs and led the development of the first U.S. lottery responsible gambling problem gambling educational and outreach program in the United States. I've been associated with the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling since its inception in 1996 and have been the chair for the last 5 years. I also currently work as a consultant on the national level and champion responsible gambling related to systems, related to standards, and related to responsible gambling outreach programs. I am here today representing, however, the Board of Directors of the Oregon Council on Problem Gambling, and we would like to express our appreciation for the opportunity to testify. The Council, unfortunately, has not had an opportunity to meet to develop a formal opinion on the specifics within the three lottery bills. However, the Council supports programs that are effective in protecting the health of Oregonians related to the management of problem gambling and responsible gambling programs. And we do want to make this committee aware that we are a resource to Oregon, we're a resource to the lottery, we're a resource to the tribes. In fact, those groups are all represented on the board, and it's a very collaborative place in Oregon to have discussions and take action. We have specific goals. One, we are a platform collaboration. Again, Dr. Jeff Maraud is a member, Sharon Williams is a member who is a recovering gambler. Andy Cartmill represents prevention. John Klontz is
as the Deputy Director of the Oregon Lottery. Nicole Corbin is the Problem Gambling Services Manager. Golden Fultz represents the Oregon Counties. Justin Martin represents the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, as well as the Oregon Tribal Gaming Alliance. And Steve McCoy represents the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. So this collaboration has proved very useful for Oregon in the past and very important for that collaboration to continue. Our goal is to be a reliable resource of information to inform citizens and its decision and policymakers on the issues relevant to gaming management and problem gambling management in Oregon. We are currently trying to obtain funding to conduct an updated prevalence study that would look at the percentage of problem gamblers, pathological gamblers in Oregon. And we are also documenting best practice and evidence-based practice around the globe to inform Oregon on programs they may want to consider and adopt. That is an ongoing activity because, as Dr. Murata referenced, those programs are quickly evolving, and our responsibility is to stay on top of those and bring those forward. We also monitor and report on the effectiveness of problem gambling services. We assess the availability and effectiveness of treatment and prevention efforts to ensure the state is meeting reasonable levels of treatment with the goal of providing effective treatment to a minimum of 3% each year for those we estimate to be suffering with a problem or pathological gambling and to assist their families. We also have a goal to promote public education, to monitor and seek to improve the level of awareness of treatment services available to Oregonian, and also to monitor and seek to increase the percentage of Oregonians who set time limits and budget limits when they gamble, which is a worldwide recognized best practice in preventing people from developing gambling problems in the first place.
Carol, we would really appreciate it if your group would have an opinion on the three pieces of legislation that we have. If there are any amendments that they think would be important, we'd be delighted to hear from you.
Okay, and Representative Tomei, thank you. That we do have a meeting on March 7th, and that's the goal of that meeting.
Good. Thank you so much. Okay. Last but not least.
I live in the best for last.
That's right.
Madam Chair, committee, thank you first for the hard work that has brought us to here with this bill today.
Could you give us your name, please?
My name is Westwood. I'm from Portland. I'm here today as president of Voices of Problem Gambling Recovery. VPGR is a statewide organization, and our mission is simple. It is to speak for those affected by problem gambling. We advocate, we are here to educate, and to promote recovery. I'm speaking on behalf of those residents of Oregon, those 77,000 that aren't here with me today. That's an enormous number. I was born here. If not now, when? That's what I say to all three of these bills. They may need work, but they're a step, some bigger than others. I've been on a lot of the committees, the focus groups, the discussions. It's really important. Some of this can't wait. We're excited about this. I appreciate the work. I lend our support to these bills with the hope that they become part of a new and better educated plan that will address the problems of gambling in Oregon. Having said that, to Dr. Murata and to these two ladies, I concur. So I can talk to you about the bottom and what that looks like all day long. You can't imagine unless you've been there. The common question is, how much have you lost? And what does the bottom look like? What I lost was years with my children. And it looks different each day. So to have someone educated in the facility speaking specifically to 2166, whether the bill is finite or loose at this point, doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is their ability to maybe touch a few rather than wait a year to begin the process. And we can't know how few that might be or how many. Why would we wait? Why would we take that risk? And I'm open to question.
Thank you, Wes. Any questions? We appreciate coming. I've attended some of those meetings, and I appreciate all the people who come to those meetings and bare their souls, just as Kitty did, just as you have about your husband. I appreciate all of you who have come, who have shared, and some in writing and some in person. It's a difficult issue, and we're not giving up on it. We're going to work really hard to make sure the time is now to pass something so we can start to address these issues. Any quick questions? Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, everyone in this room who came up and testified. Seems like, at this point at least, the most questions are around the 2166. I just encourage you, if you have ideas about how to mend it, Cynthia, you particularly said there are a lot of things that you would suggest to change it. I would encourage that. I do think that that's one of our, you know, opportunities. We've got a lot of policy, financial, but, you know, the front line treatment, and particularly the idea, which I hadn't thought of, that some of these people have, the servers have addictions themselves. I think one of the big issues here is that we don't see it, we don't talk about it. If it's whatever percentage of the population we've talked about, 7 or 10%, and barely any of us here can identify who those people are, whereas if someone has an alcohol addiction, it's way more visible. So I agree, you know, my support for it is because I think we absolutely need to attack it from a lot of different angles, but I would be very interested in hearing ways to strengthen it if you have those suggestions.
Okay, may I just one comment?
Yes, of course.
Just for a point of perspective, I went through treatment 8 years ago, and I did every day I could get out of that two-year program. And so here we are 8 years later, and it is still, you can see from my sitting here and listening to this discussion, it still is so fresh to me. And so it just tells you the power that we're dealing with.
Very powerful. So I wonder if anybody in our committee would like to work. It sounds like there's a lot of work we can do in all three bills, but there seems to be particular interest in the, 2166. Representative Gilling, would you have any interest in working on that?
I would not, thank you.
Representative Gallegos.
I'm already in housing.
No, that's fine.
I know
that's
you
fine.
Are.
It's fine.
Would you?
Sure.
Terrific. Great.
Sure.
All right. Good. Thank you all very much. Thank you, committee. I feel blessed to work with this group. You're wonderful. You listen really well. You stayed until almost 5 o'clock on a Friday after a long week. Thank you very much.
We'll make you pay for it, Ms. Manchin.
I know you will. You always do.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the House Committee on Human Services and Housing.
Yes, those are huge.
Thank you.
That was good. I should,
Yes.